Welcome to the Second Court of Appeals. We have two cases on our 1:30 docket that will be orally argued and one case on our 3 o'clock docket for oral argument. We've reversed the order for the 1:30 cases, and we'll hear the Westworth Village City of White Settlement case first. Before we begin, I want to introduce the panel to you. To my right is Justice Lee Gabriel. To my left is Justice Elizabeth Kerr, and I'm Justice Bonnie Sutterth. And if you will call the case, clerk, then we'll proceed.
Court will now call City of Westworth Village, Texas versus City of White Settlement, Texas. May it please support. Mr. Michael Hackett will argue for the appellant. Mr. Robert F. Morris will argue for the appellant.
You may begin.
May it please the court. White Settlement sued Westworth Village for allegedly breaching an economic development agreement between Westworth Village and a commercial developer called Allegiance Commercial Development. Because governmental immunity applies, the trial court did not have subject matter jurisdiction in this case, and the trial court erred in denying Westworth Village's plea to the jurisdiction on that ground. Our appeal here seeks a reversal of that denial and a dismissal of the claims brought for a lack of subject matter jurisdiction. The issue before this court is whether immunity applies, whether it's been waived, not whether the concept of immunity is fair or the application in this case is a balancing of the equities or anything like that. The facts surrounding this case, I believe, are largely uncontested and fairly set out in the briefs. I'll be happy to answer any questions about the facts. Westworth Village does take a little bit of an issue with the affidavit used to support an allegation that the agreement is more than what the agreement actually says it is. We're here on an economic development agreement that was entered into pursuant to Chapter 380 of the Texas Local Government Code. I will call it the 380 agreement to shorten that from economic development agreement. The agreement is between Allegiance and Westworth Village, and it provides that Westworth Village will share 50% of sales tax collections with the developer if a Walmart is developed on a particular piece of property that straddles the border between Westworth Village and White Settlement. The buildings are actually in Westworth Village, and that's the point here. Those sales taxes were
shared. This is fairly characterized as a tax abatement arrangement.
Your Honor, I don't believe it is because the tax abatement agreements are typically ad valorem taxation abatements where a developer gets an amount of time to recoup some of their investment by not having to pay those ad valorem taxes. This is an economic development program grant under Chapter 380 of the local government code, not under the tax code. And the purpose of these are to stimulate investment in our economy as a whole, to reduce unemployment, underemployment, and stimulate economic development. So I think it's not a tax abatement agreement. I think it's an economic development program grant as set out specifically in the statute. The only reason White Settlement is here, they're an assignee of certain benefits to that to the 380 agreement. They took a 34% cut of the sales tax collections. Well, Westworth Village ultimately terminated that agreement, and White Settlement sued, alleging a breach of the 380 agreement. So the application of immunity is the first and primary step here. It is a de novo review for this court. The Wasson case that we've cited to the court is the leading Supreme Court authority on what is and what is not immune, what functions are and are not immune. Governmental functions are, proprietary functions are not. So the Wasson case extended the proprietary governmental dichotomy from just tort cases to contract cases, which is what this is.
Let me ask you, it seems to me from the timeline that your client decided to terminate this agreement once Allegiance was getting its first 12 years of payments, correct?
Well, I don't know that was it is correct in terms of time. I'm not sure it was the exact reason
Could Westworth Village have terminated this entire agreement as to Allegiance and White Settlement at any time after it was entered into?
Well, I believe they would be immune from suit for doing so, yes. I think at any time, I think they could have, and immunity would still apply because the function at issue here is a governmental function. And what the court has to look at...
Even with regard to allegiance?
Absolutely. Okay. Even with regard... The function, the focus for a function analysis is what is the city's function in entering into the agreement, not what is the other side's function in entering into the agreement. The governmental functions are defined in the Texas Tort Claims Act two ways. Number one, there's a laundry list, and the laundry list contains things that the legislature has said those are absolutely governmental functions. And the Supreme Court has said that courts don't have discretion to override the legislature. If it's listed, it's a governmental function. Second, if it's a function that is enjoined upon the city from the state as a matter of the state sovereignty for public purposes, that's the broad definition of what is a governmental function. I think we've got both here. We have a listed governmental function in tax collections, and we have a clear demonstration that this is a governmental function under the broad definition because these powers were enjoined upon the city of Westworth Village by the
state. Really fall under tax collections. I mean, I understand that you assess taxes, collected taxes, and then paid, paid White Settlement a portion of that, but you had to pay that amount whether you ever collected those taxes or not, didn't you?
I do not believe that's correct, Your Honor. And if you'll look in the agreement in paragraph 4 of the 380 agreement, it sets out the program grant itself and when payment is due, and it says payments are due 15 days after receipt by the city of monthly payments of such taxes from the state of Texas. So if Westworth Village never received any taxes from the state of Texas, there wouldn't be any payment to be made. So I think that cuts against the argument that the White Settlement makes that this was just this is how we calculate the payments that are going to be made. It's not really a sharing of the taxes. The taxes only get shared once they're received from the state of Texas. So I think the agreement itself makes clear this is a tax collection issue. It's a sharing of tax collection. And at the very least, it implicates the city's function, governmental function, of collecting taxes. And the cases are clear, and we've cited them to the court, that if there is any governmental function implicated, even if it's a mixed governmental proprietary function, the entire function is to be deemed by the courts to be a governmental function. So I believe this is a tax collection case. I believe the agreement makes that clear. Even if it's not, however, it's still a governmental function when you look at the actual language of the statute, when it says those functions are governmental if they are enjoined upon a municipality by the state as a matter of the state sovereignty to be exercised for a public purpose. That's the definition of a governmental function. And in this case, in order to see that, I think we kind of have to take a look at the history of Chapter 380 of the Local Government Code and see how it came about, because the Constitution of our state says you cannot use, no governmental entity can use public funds for private purposes. In 1987, the voters of the state amended our Constitution to grant the legislature of the state of Texas the power to create programs and make loans and grants of public money, quote, for the public purposes of development and diversification of the economy of the state, the elimination of unemployment or underemployment in this state, et cetera. So what that did is it created a definition in the Constitution of what is a public purpose. And it includes economic development programs, economic development in the state, the diversification of our economy, the reduction of unemployment, underemployment in the state. Now, what the state did after that, 1989, the legislature enacted Chapter 380, which is the enabling statute for that constitutional amendment. And in that, in Chapter 380, the state grants to cities the power to do this, the power to implement economic development grant programs as an arm of the state for the public purpose of economic development. So you go back to the definition, it's granted upon the city by law, by the state, that's what Chapter 380 is, for the exercise of a public purpose. Our Constitution was amended in 1987 to declare these economic development programs a governmental purpose. And so therefore, this is a governmental function that has been enacted. And I think that's consistent with some other areas where the legislature has actually spoken on this. In the local government code 501.004, there's a legislative finding that reads, "The general welfare of the people of this state require as a public purpose the promotion and development of new and expanded business opportunities." That's just another thing that this is a function of government. It is a governmental function. It's not a proprietary function, and therefore immunity applies unless it is expressly waived by some statute. Now, we can only have waiver by an express statement by the legislature. Courts defer to the legislature on when immunity is waived. And in this case, there's only one possible waiver that exists, and it's section 271.152 of the Texas Local Government Code, which provides that contracts between a municipality or a governmental entity for goods and services provided directly to the municipality will waive governmental immunity. In other words, we don't want a municipality to call Ford and say, "Hey, I need a new fire truck," and Ford deliver the fire truck and say, hold out their hand for payment, and the city say, "Nope, I'm immune. You can't even sue me. I get the truck."
Do you think that if you had terminated this agreement in year two, do you think Allegiance could have raised 271 to say that they had provided goods and services by building this Walmart and Sam's?
Well, I don't believe that it would have qualified. I think they might have made that argument, Your Honor. But I think the way goods and services are defined and the direct benefit that has to go to a municipality in order to implicate a waiver, and we've cited a myriad of cases to the court that all kind of lead up to Conroe, the city of Conroe case, and we gave you those cases so that you can see what has been held to be a direct benefit to the city and what is only an indirect or attenuated benefit to the city. And in those, the Conroe case is specifically on point in terms of the waiver, because Conroe had a dilapidated hotel in the city of Conroe, and the city of Conroe really wanted it to be renovated, and that developer came and said, "We want to renovate it." They entered into two different agreements with the city of Conroe. One was a tax abatement agreement, ad valorem tax abatement, and one was a hotel occupancy tax sharing agreement. Ultimately, the developer there sued the city of Conroe, and the city of Conroe raised immunity grounds, and what the Court of Appeals there did was they determined that this was not the delivery of direct services to the city. While the city would certainly see a benefit in economic development and tax creation by that dilapidated hotel being renovated and returned, those were not services that the developer contracted specifically to provide directly to the city. They contracted for their own private wealth generation gain, which is exactly what Allegiance did in this case. They wanted to develop Sam's and Walmart so that they could make money off the property that they owned and that they wanted to develop on. So this is an indirect and attenuated benefit at best to the city of Westworth Village. And in those cases, all of the cases that we've cited to the court, including the Conroe case, that is not sufficient to create a waiver under 271.152. And I don't think it matters the time, whether it was the first year of the agreement or the 10th year of the agreement or the 30th year of the agreement. I think that this is a governmental function. It's not waived by our legislature, and therefore the trial court in this case erred in denying our plea to the jurisdiction, because the trial court simply does not have subject matter jurisdiction when governmental immunity applies.
I understand the definition of a governmental function and your belief that this falls within that definition. If the definition of a proprietary function is for the benefit of the locality and its inhabitants, why does it not fall under that?
Well, Your Honor, I think that goes to what the legislature has defined as a public benefit. The legislature and the people of Texas, by amending the Constitution to specifically say that the development of our economy, the diversification of our economy, and the reduction of unemployment in our state is a public purpose. And I think that's where it comes down to. These sales taxes that are generated, only a small portion of those go to the cities involved. 6% of those sales taxes go straight to the state. And that's why it is a benefit to the entire state to develop these programs, to develop properties and have our economy diversified. It's the great Texas miracle, is what Rick Perry used to call it, is we're bringing in all these companies because of our tax situations. And so it benefits the entirety of the state. And that's why it's a public purpose. Did I answer
you? It benefits the locality and its inhabitants.
Well, it certainly does benefit the locality and its inhabitants, but the Supreme Court has made clear that even if the motive of the municipality is one of profit, if it's a governmental function, it's a governmental function. And the Wasson case made that clear.
Thank you.
And I will reserve my remaining time for my rebuttal.
Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court. It is important for us to discuss the contract in question here, because if we examine the contract and understand how it works, then I think the inapplicability of the immunity arguments that are being made by Westworth are pretty clear. This contract is a little bit unusual in that it's a three-sided deal. We have the developer. Many of the cases that are cited by Westworth deal with developers getting tax abatements from cities. Well, the Allegiance is not a party to this case. They're not filing a lawsuit. So that law, I think, that's cited and relied on substantially by Westworth is inapplicable to the case here. I represent White Settlement. White Settlement was induced into this arrangement because Westworth did not have the ability to make the deal work. Westworth did not have the ability to provide water or sewage services to the developed land. Even though the entire land that's in question here does sit at the boundary of White Settlement and Westworth, the buildings are all going to be on the Westworth side. That's where they...
Where in the contract, though, does it specifically say that White Settlement is going to be providing infrastructure?
There is general reference. Page 1, Section 1, the contract says that the city, which is Westworth, specifically finds and acknowledges that the economic benefit to be derived from the business operations on the property as defined below could not have been achieved and will not continue without the cooperation, assistance, performance, and involvement of the grantee and its assignee, which
that could mean anything as far as White Settlement goes, couldn't it?
It means something. There is a clear reference there. It doesn't mean nothing. It's the court is bound, I think, to construe the contract as a whole. This language cannot be ignored. It clearly means something, and there is clearly a reason why Westworth agreed to make these monthly payments to White Settlement. They didn't agree to make the payments for no reason at all. Now, we have provided as part of the record here the affidavit of the former mayor of White Settlement, James Utz, to the effect that they did, in fact, build the infrastructure. They extended the water and sewage lines from White Settlement over to Westworth. This was an absolute requirement of to make this arrangement work. It would not. This project never would have been built if it were not for White Settlement. As a matter of fact, those lines are still there today. The project, Sam's and Walmart, couldn't operate today without White Settlement's infrastructure. There's a clear benefit provided to Westworth by White Settlement, which they continue to use today. That's why, you know, this contract was designed to compensate and encourage continued cooperation by White Settlement so that the project could continue. And the payments were to continue for so long as there was a project there, and White Settlement was continuing to provide the water and sewage facilities. But getting back to the contract, there is all these cases about developers and them getting benefited by a hotel that they're remodeling or some other matter that they're remodeling doesn't apply to us. The only benefit that we, White Settlement, got out of this deal was the monthly payments. We built the infrastructure. We continued to supply that facility to this very day, and we expected to be compensated for it. Now, when you look at this arrangement in or this contract, I want to make sure that I do point out to the court that the court should not limit itself to only to the text of this contract. The parole evidence rule clearly allows several exceptions, one of which is partial performance, which we did because we built the infrastructure. The other one is if you are seeking to add additional information about the contract, you're not contradicting or varying the terms of the written agreement, you may provide that information. Now, with respect to the proprietary governmental dichotomy, we would emphasize that this particular case and the involvement of the two cities was to attract business. We have cited to the court the case of City of Dallas versus City of Corsicana. In that case, the City of Corsicana had worked out a arrangement with a Home Depot warehouse facility to build in Corsicana, and they were to receive certain tax abatements. City of Dallas comes in and makes a better deal for Home Depot, and they move to Dallas, and the City of Corsicana sues Dallas on a tortious interference claim. The Court of Appeals at Waco examines the situation, and they conclude that recruiting a business is not a governmental function. This is not, well, it's important to know what this case or this contract is not about. There's nothing in the contract about tax collections. There's reference to sales tax dollars, but as a matter of law, the city that is controlling the cash registers gets the tax dollars on sales tax. White Settlement had absolutely no direct right to go to the comptroller and say, give us part of those sales tax dollars. The only reason the sales tax is mentioned at all in this contract is because it provides a means by which we get paid for our services and the developer, Allegiance, gets paid for theirs. Likewise, all 380 agreements are not necessarily governmental in nature. In this case, the Dallas versus Corsicana case, they found that particular agreement was designed to recruit business. That's a proprietary function. That's exactly what White Settlement and Westworth were doing in this case. We're not dealing with blight. We're not dealing with slums where there's urban development or anything like that. We had vacant land, which the parties wanted to attract retail business to because it would be good for their communities and would generate tax dollars. So even if the court were to say, well, this could be governmental, I think the 271 waiver clearly applies. Another thing I want to emphasize to the court is that there is a direct palpable benefit to Westworth. They got the infrastructure. They got the tax dollars. And they get to keep operating it today because of my city. There's
Let me ask you a crazy kind of hypothetical. You said that the infrastructure that White Settlement provided is still in some fashion benefiting Westworth Village on this property. What do you suppose would happen if White Settlement decided just to go and chop off all those lines that lead across into Westworth Village?
We would probably get sued by Sam's. I mean, there would be some due process issues there, obviously. So,
does White Settlement have any sort of specific agreement with Sam's or Walmart to do anything?
No.
Outside of this contract?
No. Okay. No. So with respect to
Where's the agreement regarding the infrastructure?
Well, as I pointed out earlier, there is a general reference on the first page of the agreement to White Settlement providing cooperation performance to make this deal go.
Right. In other words, there's a recitation in there that we couldn't do this without you. We recognize that.
Yes.
But where is the agreement that White Settlement would provide the infrastructure?
That's not specifically stated in the agreement. We have supplied the affidavit of the former mayor that says what we did. And there's no prohibition under the parole evidence rule for the court to consider that because that explains the contract. It doesn't vary the written contract or create any sort of internal irregularities. The another point which has not been dealt with a lot today is the contract of the concept of estoppel. We have cited to the court, and I think it's directly applicable to this case, that an estoppel can arise in situations like this where a city knowingly gets a substantial benefit, they purposefully avail themselves of that benefit, and the other party is at some disadvantage because we paid for it. And then they seek to walk away from it. Estoppel does arise. Now, the city of Westworth says, well, you can't prevent us from asserting our sovereign immunity. Well, that's true. But what the cases say is that in situations like this, when the estoppel arises, constitutes a waiver of your right to seek immunity. It is completely unfair and inequitable for one party to knowingly take advantage of another party, like in this situation, and either say there's no contract, and I understand Westworth is not saying that here, but the result is the same. They're saying, well, we recognize the contract. The problem is you can't enforce it because of the immunity issue. I think if the court looks at the estoppel argument as being a form of waiver, I think you can see that it would clearly apply in the event that the court says that this is proprietary and 271 does not apply.
Do either one of the cases that you've cited under your estoppel argument, I think it's City of Lubbock and City of Austin, do either one of those squarely address whether the estoppel facts constituted the equivalent of a waiver of governmental immunity?
Well, I'm not sure I can find it right now, but the courts clearly look at the estoppel argument and say they recognize that the existence of this argument does not prevent the defendant from asserting sovereign immunity. What the logic is that if it applies, if the elements of an estoppel apply, then they will consider those elements to be a waiver of the right of the defendant city to assert immunity. So in sum, we believe that if a fair interpretation of this contract would show that this is a proprietary function, the essential part of this contract was to recruit business to the city of Westworth Village. It wasn't to create a tax collection scheme. It wasn't to create urban renewal in a blighted slum type situation. So I think clearly this is a proprietary contract. This is the sort of thing that private companies do all the time. Secondly, even if you got the Westworth gets by that argument, they've got to recognize that they did get a direct benefit under 271 and that that statutory waiver would apply. Thank you.
Will you add one extra minute to Mr. Hassett's time, please? Go ahead.
Thank you, Your Honor. We have a very fundamental disagreement on whether or not waiver applies in this case, and I want to take this opportunity to answer. I know Justice Kerr, Justice Sutterth, you both asked questions about where in this agreement does it say that White Settlement is going to provide water and sewer infrastructure, and the simple fact is it doesn't exist anywhere, not in the agreement, and not even in the affidavit that they presented to try to supplement or add to the agreement. In fact, when you look at the affidavit itself, paragraph 6 says, Walmart representatives came and said, we need water and sewer infrastructure developed here. Walmart representatives demanded it to be placed there, and White Settlement built it. That's consistent with how it's being used today, because White Settlement provides water and sewer services to the Walmart and Sam's locations. Well,
are we not allowed, though, as Appellee's counsel suggests, to take that broad language in Section 1 of the agreement and accept parole evidence to explain what it does mean? I mean, it had to mean something, didn't it?
Well, even if it means something, it doesn't mean they're providing it directly to Westworth Village, which is the requirement for a waiver argument under 271-152. Those services have to be provided, and they have to be in a written agreement that spells out the obligations of the parties. And this written agreement doesn't spell out any obligation of White Settlement to provide that, and it doesn't spell out any obligation of Westworth Village to pay for it. So the broad language isn't sufficient in the interpretation of the case law. There's I know I've cited it in the brief, and I think it's a Clear Lake site, but I don't remember expressly off the top of my head. But Clear Lake says that when you're talking about waivers, the obligation has to be clearly set out in writing in the body of the agreement.
Well, of course, Westworth Village's obligation to pay White Settlement is pretty clear in this agreement, isn't it?
The obligation to share tax collections is set out in the agreement, although the agreement itself, again, White Settlement is an assignee to benefits under the agreement. That's all they are. They have no obligations under the terms of the agreement, and all they take is an assignment of 34% of those sales tax collections from Allegiance, not from Westworth Village. So I think it's clear on the waiver issue that these benefits that he's talking about are indirect or attenuated at best and not directly provided to Westworth Village. And I think if you read the affidavit that says it was provided for Walmart, that's pretty clear that, yes, Westworth Village might have received an attenuated benefit from it, but not a direct one. In addressing the Dallas versus Corsicana case, and I know that that's probably where, Justice Hutterth, your first question to me came from, which is it was a tax abatement agreement the same. Corsicana and Dallas Corsicana case is different from this case in a number of ways. Number one, the Supreme Court vacated it and reversed 501 Southwest 3rd 71. So that case has been is gone on different rationale, but the Supreme Court said they didn't have jurisdiction to hear it in the first place. The trial court didn't have jurisdiction to hear it in the first place. It was decided, Dallas versus Corsicana was decided 8 months before the Wasson case was decided, which means it was decided under prior law, not current governmental proprietary dichotomy for contract cases. It has a very short one-paragraph analysis. That case was actually a pre-suit deposition case, is all it was, in which the city of Corsicana and Navarro College sued to get a deposition to find out if the city of Dallas tortiously interfered with an abatement agreement that they had with Home Depot, that Corsicana had with Home Depot, when Home Depot decided to move to Dallas. So what the court actually, the actual ruling in the case was that it wasn't a governmental function because it wasn't the tax abatement agreement at all. It was tortious interference with somebody else's contract. So that case is just different for a lot of things, for a lot of reasons. And third, and or finally, I don't know if I'm on four or three, but the 380 agreement is under a completely different code of ordinances. We're dealing with an economic development program grant over the local under the local government code, not a tax abatement under the local property tax code. Equitable estoppel, I just want to say one thing about that, and that is this case didn't make it into my brief, but I do want the court to hear the Jonah Water Special Utility District case, which is found 2009 Westlaw 2837649, where the court said that that governmental entity may be estopped from taking certain actions. We have found no case in which governmental entity was estopped from asserting immunity. Such a result would vitiate entrenched judicial policies. No one is ever estopped from asserting subject matter jurisdiction.
Where did that case come from?
That case came from the Austin Court of Appeals in 2009. So in short, we believe that the trial court erred. It did not have subject matter jurisdiction. It should have granted our plea to the jurisdiction, and we ask the court to reverse the trial court and dismiss the claims for lack of subject matter jurisdiction. Thank you.
Thank you. Gentlemen, your case has been submitted. You are now free to go about your business. You're also free to stay and listen to other argument that's going to be offered today.